Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
All right, looks like we're all recording. Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fishing Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and today it's a bit of a combination of a crew chat and a guest chat. We're just like all over the place with this episode, because we've got Katie with us, who is a field staff writer, and we've got Adam, who's our managing editor, who you know well from other podcasts and shows, and we're going to talk about some fun stuff. But first, we'll get a little bit of shop talk out of the way. So let's see, episode we released last would have been the episode on the front shoulder that Adam and I did. Was pretty excited to get that one out. It's the first time we've done the cooking by cut, so curious to see what you think of it. So please give us some feedback. Instagram, Facebook, email, whatever. You can reach us at whatscooking@harvestingnature.com. But let us know how you liked that episode. We're really curious. We're going to push through next week after this episode. You will get to hear an episode on the Flatiron steak, which we'll talk a little bit about. Same process. So butcher, culinary history, anatomy, meat composition, all those things. So definitely lots there to talk about. And then, of course, recipes and cooking and eating, because those are all very valuable things. But pretty excited to push through this series. And then, as I mentioned, too, like episodes like today. But let's see. Big news for me. So I mentioned last episode, and I'll go ahead and hit on it again this episode, is that we've got an event here local in Denver with the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. We'll be hosting a trivia night over at Lowry Beer Garden on the 21st of July. We will include some links to sign up in the show notes if you're local to Denver. Excited to get out and interact with everybody in that. We don't always get the opportunity to interact with people in person and in a very frequent basis, just because we're spread out all over the country, but I think this will be fun. So it should be myself. Ricky will be there as well. Ricky has been on the podcast before. She's an excellent wild game chef, also one of our field staff writers. She's going to be there actually leading the trivia, and I'm going to be there just standing around drinking beer, looking cool, because that's what I do best. But no, it'll be fun. We'll do some cool prizes and things like that, but check that out. Links to sign up are in the show notes. Please join us. And then outside of that, headed up for, this is the week preceding 4th of July, so I'm heading to Southern California to go visit my mother, who lives up in the mountains, and I'm going to go visit her and do some fishing and some hiking. And I don't know, California's got this like open rabbit season that's year-round, so there may or may not be some rabbit hunting in there. We'll see. I also get super skeptical about hunting rabbits in warm weather, but we'll see. TBD. More to follow on that. But I'll kick it over to Adam. Adam, you got any updates for us?
Not too much. I've been fishing, doing some bass fishing lately, which has been, like, our season just opens in mid-June, so it's nice to get out doing that again. And I've been doing as much summer foraging as I've been able to do lately, so been finding some new things to harvest and taste, which has been cool, like milkweed. So walking the dog today and came across a huge serviceberry tree.
That could have gone a number of different directions. You said I was walking the dog today and I came across a huge, and it could have
been anything.
Yeah.
In this case, it was a serviceberry tree, and one of the branches had actually been pulled down in a storm. So it was just in perfect picking position right in front of me, and it was just chock full of berries, and the birds hadn't gotten to them yet. So I'd have a huge basket of serviceberries, which is pretty rare for me. So I was pretty happy with that today.
What are serviceberries? I'm not familiar.
So serviceberries, they're spread all across Canada. I'm sure most of the states, northern states anyways as well. But they're kind of like a blueberry. They're also called Saskatoon berries or June berries, shadbush berries. They're kind of like a big blueberry that grows on a tree, and they have a taste kind of similar to blueberries and cherries and maybe a little bit of almond or something in them.
Sugar plum or wild plum? Do you guys have them out there, Katie? Do you know?
No, I've never heard of them, but they sound fantastic. I would like to eat some of them.
Most people out here a lot of people call them Saskatoon berries, and they make pies out of them. But I think
it looks like a blueberry, but like purplish pinkish colored and on a tree, not a bush.
Yeah, pretty similar to blueberries.
You sold me with like blueberry, cherry, almond. That's like a perfect combo. I'd like to try that.
Oh, I guess they have them in Minnesota. That makes sense.
They have everything in Minnesota. That seems to be the forager's paradise there. It's like we're all different places, like big confluence of different regions of foraging, it seems.
Oh, and a lot of places they're planted as ornamentals because they have beautiful snowy white flowers.
And that's why they're called a shad bush, because the trees are some of the first to bloom, and it's when the shad runs are happening. So they picked up an interesting name. Yeah.
That's super cool.
The more you know.
Yeah, the more you know. When they have a really cool name that I can't, Emile Lanchier. Maybe that's their Latin name. Or something. No, Latin names have two parts. But okay. Either way, no, that sounds really awesome. So, what else did you find on your walk or summer?
I've been harvesting milkweed and been trying out some interesting things like burdock stem and thistle. Been trying to branch out a little bit into new things. I have this kind of cool little thing in the backyard. I have like a basswood tree growing, and basswood leaves are edible. So they also are prone to coppice growth. So they get a little bunch of suckers growing at the bottom of the tree. And so I have this basswood tree with all this coppice growth full of leaves. And the deer come in and eat it all the time. So then it just keeps continually growing new, fresh leaves, like young, tender leaves. So I just have a constant crop of basswood, like nice, tender, young basswood leaves I can harvest, which is pretty cool. So
what does a basswood leaf taste like?
I don't know, like a basswood leaf. It's not too much to it. It's kind of like a, you know, you like have grape leaves that you would stuff, like a lot of the Lebanese and Greek
like,
people have, like
the dolmas. Yeah.
Dolmas, yeah. You can do something like that with them. I actually made a tempura, like a Japanese tempura dish, and I added them as part of the tempura. So they were like fried. Hmm. Yeah, battered and fried. They were really nice.
That's awesome. That's a great idea. I love that.
Yeah.
I was thinking like tea leaves, but
that's what I was too.
Yeah.
I was thinking like wilted spinach, just because I think a lot of like greens are just like automatically, I'm like, all right, I'll wilt them and eat them. Like we had a...
throw them with some bacon,
yep,
right?
Yep. We did dandelion, what was it? Roasted yellow beets, roasted daikon radish, dandelion greens, and goat cheese in like this just delicious... oh, it was so good.
But, wow, you guys are amazing. I don't belong on this podcast. I'm... yeah.
No, that's not true. I've seen your food.
You guys are so creative.
I've seen your food. Well, since we're here, so I'll introduce Katie. So Katie's an Oregon-based food writer, recipe developer, and outdoor enthusiast. She enjoys encouraging her readers on how to respectfully forage and harvest seasonally available food, create nature-inspired recipes, and have a great time doing it. The meals she creates for her husband and three children come from constant adventure. I really like that part. In teaching her little ones some of life's most valuable skills and living their lives as a family to the absolute fullest. So, Katie Wiley, welcome to the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Thank you for having me on. This is fun.
It's already started off great. That's why I like having Adam on, because he's just full of food. Food I'm inspiration, full of food. Yes, too. Never a hungry moment.
No. Yeah, I mean, we've been talking for like 5 minutes, and I already feel like I need a notebook down here to jot down some recipe ideas for Adam.
Well, I mean, the motto is you have to eat before the show, even for the listeners, because you'll end up hungry by the end of the show, which is good.
Nobody told me that, so I haven't eaten yet. I'm starving, but I have a whole bunch of salalberry bushes right behind me, which I don't know if you guys have salalberry bushes up there. They grow only typically along the coastline, but these are edible, so I suppose I could take a quick break and eat some of these behind me.
What are they called? Salal?
Salal. S-A-L-A-L. Salalberries. And they grow right along the coastline. I think maybe from like Northern California up to Canada. And, you know, I moved here about 3.5 years ago from the Portland area. I live here in Oregon. And I had never heard of these things. I mean, they are everywhere here. So to the point you would think they're maybe like poisonous because they're so invasive. But they're not. And we don't have them anywhere else in Oregon other than right along the coastline.
It says
they're delicious.
Do they taste like something similar?
Yeah, so they too are like a blueberry. They look similar to a blueberry, but they're like a very earthy blueberry. They're not too sweet. Yeah.
That sounds great.
They're great.
It says salal berries are highly prized amongst the Coast Salish people.
Probably,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the native tribes out here. They There's, it said that the tribes out here back in the day were some of the most artistic tribes, because we have so much food here. But I always say you can't go hungry here unless you try to go hungry, because there is so much food all year long that they didn't have to focus all of their time and energy on foraging and storing up for the winter. So they could focus on other things like art, because we have so much edible food here.
That's awesome.
Edible food. All food is edible, but you know what I mean.
So you said you came from Portland. So what can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? Sort of, are you native to Oregon or moved there, or what's your background?
I am. I am a born and raised Oregonian. And my husband and I lived in the Portland area our whole entire lives. We actually went to high school together, although we were not high school sweethearts. But so we went to high school together, and it's actually a very strange turn of events how we even got out here to the coast in the first place. So one of our real jobs, I feel like we do a lot of unconventional things, is we renovate vintage trailers and tiny houses for hotels and Airbnbs. Oh, cool. And one of our first hotels that we did was out here on the Oregon coast. We did a tiny house village called Tiny Tranquility. And we were coming back and forth all the time to this charming town called Waldport that we had never heard of in our entire life, because it's a very small town, even though we are born and raised Oregonians. And we fell in love with it out here. So we sold our house in the valley and we moved out here to the coast, and it absolutely has been the best decision we've ever made.
No, that's awesome.
Yeah. We love it out
looking,
here.
Just looking in reference. So I have been to Oregon once. I spent, did some bear hunting out by southwest of Eugene.
Okay.
But that's
so
about,
that's,
yeah.
That's kind of near us. We're sort of near Eugene, but we're, I suppose, northwest of Eugene.
Yeah, I think we were, I'm trying to look and see on my map here where we stopped in, because I had some delicious Hawaiian food at a restaurant. I don't think in North Bend, somewhere close. Definitely one of those like picturesque Oregon coastal towns that I was like, this is like something out of a movie.
You know, Florence, there's a place in Florence, which is actually just like 30 minutes from my house, that has a place that I have not been, so I cannot verify this, but I've heard it's got fantastic Hawaiian food, so maybe that's where you went.
No, is it called the Pono Hukalaiu? I'm butchering
it. I don't know. I've never been there, but
that's it. I recognize it now. Yeah, yeah, you're right. It's in Florence. It's on
is
like
it in Florence?
It's on like the south side of Florence, like right by the river. Yep.
I've driven by it 100 times.
Yeah.
Now I need to stop.
It's
okay.
Good. I enjoyed it. Well, I was also had been in the Bear Woods for like 4 days, so a hot meal
everything
is always
is good.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, everything's good when you leave the Bear Woods, that's for sure.
So so how did you get into, so fishing and foraging, do you hunt or just fish and forage?
Yes, well, I say yes, I go hunting, but sure. My husband is actually the hunter.
Okay.
And I am the camp cook and the mom and the everything else. But so my husband is a hunter. I have archery hunted one time. It's, you know, I don't. He loves it and I love cooking it, so I feel like we're gonna keep our roles just that.
That's fair.
But I do love doing everything else. Like I love foraging, I love fishing, clamming, crabbing, all that. Just I don't know. Big game is I don't know. Let's be honest here. I snapped my arm one time with the bow, right? And I had this massive bruise, and I was like, you know, this isn't my thing. Yeah, so. I leave it to the professionals.
I did that. I moved out to Colorado and I was like, all right, I'm going to start archery hunting. It's going to be a big deal. Like, I'm traditionally a rifle hunter. And I go to get a compound bow and I go out like to one of the local ranges at like the reservoir. And I get out there and like the first one, boom, I let it rip and I like it scraped and my arm swelled up. I was like, this is terrible. I like pulled my sleeve down, packed up my arrows, like got in a car, like drove away so embarrassed. And I was just like, this sucks. And so what I found out is in buying a new bow, you have to get it tuned. And I didn't know that. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I had that excuse. Mine was tuned and it was just all user error. And then it was just in the back of my mind. Every time I shot it after that, like, you're going to hit your arm again. And so, I don't know. Digging for clams is a lot less aggressive.
No, I think so. Yeah. I've got this big, like, sleeve thing I wear now. And people laugh at me. They're like, you don't have to wear that. I was like, but I... You're right, I don't have to, but I choose to because it's better than accidentally snapping my arm again. So whatever, I'm sure the hardcore archery hunters out there are snickering right now, but I don't care.
They're gonna be very disappointed in us, aren't they?
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah. So no, that's awesome. So how did you get into the fishing and foraging?
Well, it sort of just happened when we came out here to the coast. So I've always cooked game. Mm-hmm. That my husband got during archery season. So we've always had like deer, elk, bear, whatever in the freezer. So I've always been pretty comfortable with that. But it wasn't until we moved out here to the coast that, like I said, I mean, there's so much life here. We used to plan entire trips to the coast around the tides, around the clam tides. And then we moved here and we're like, we can go clamming before school, before work, on our lunch break or anything. Cause we just live right across the street from the ocean. Oh, and, nice. Oh, I know. And we're back here in the woods. So Waldport is our town slogan is where the forest meets the sea. And it really is. Cause we live in the woods and directly across the street, that direction, is the ocean. It's so incredible. Don't tell anybody how incredible Waldport is. I suppose it's too late.
Like, it's really bad. Don't move here.
Yeah. Never mind. It's terrible. It's terrible. Don't come here. No, Waldport is so incredible. And so we just, I don't know. I mean, we were just clamming and we didn't think we were boat people. We never my husband and I had literally never had a conversation like, we should buy a boat. We get here and we bought a boat because I don't know if you can live at the coast and not have a boat. So we bought a boat and we're crabbing and clamming and fishing and we got salmon poles. And I don't know. I just think it's life out here. I do occasionally meet people who have lived here either a long time or their entire lives. And they've never even like harvested mussels or anything. Like, what do you do? It's the best part of living here for sure.
Yeah. Wow. What's a, no, that's awesome. I couldn't imagine living in a place like that and not like being totally into the food.
I know. It baffles me, especially because the food here is as good as it gets. I mean, we've got gooseneck barnacles and, like I said, salisburies and salmon and Dungeness crab and all different kinds of clams just at your disposal almost all year round.
So do you think that if you lived somewhere else, you would forage as much? Like if you were like, all of a sudden we're going to move to Tennessee, would you get super into like the foraging and wild food and stuff there as well, you think?
Yeah, I think I would. So I obviously wasn't like this before we moved out here. I mean, during berry season, we would always go berry picking and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But aside from that, we didn't really do anything. However, after living here now, I'm just not sure I could ever live in a place that didn't have some sort of foraging ability. I mean, I don't know. I just think that I would feel like I was missing something that I love so much. So it would be hard to move away from this or at least someplace that offers sure. something similar to this.
How do you think, so how did the cooking come into play? Sort of like cooking, not just like cook to eat, but like your writing and your recipe development, like how did all that come to be?
I've always loved cooking. And I will let you in on a little secret. When my husband and I first got married, he gained 75 pounds. Because of my cooking. So it's not saying that I cook terribly. He just didn't ever know what like really great food tastes like. That sounds like I'm bragging, but you know what I mean. I mean, I just really enjoy cooking. And so he just was like eating like all this food that he had never experienced before in his entire life. And he'd eaten things that he had never even heard of before, like artichokes. He had never even had an artichoke his entire life until we got married. He has since lost all 75 pounds. So I will say that. So I've always really loved to cook. But I think cooking seafood can be really intimidating for a lot of people. It was certainly intimidating for me because coming from the Valley, we didn't have it totally available. I mean, we're, you know, a few hours from the coast, but just far enough away that it wasn't super accessible. So it really wasn't until I moved out here and just started cooking it on a regular basis, that, I don't know, cooking became like a big part of what I do and how I showcase life here on the coast. But as far as writing goes, that was kind of an interesting story. So I had my Instagram page, The Kitchen Wild, and I was sort of just like posting what we were eating and our new life here on the coast. And the publisher for our local newspaper, The News Times, he's also the publisher for Oregon Coast Waves magazine, reached out to me and asked if I wanted to be a writer for the newspaper. And I had never written anything, like birthday cards. I mean, that was it. Like, mm-hmm. I've never written anything ever. So I told him, I said, I have no business writing. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, you're going to do fine. And I don't know. And that's the whole story. That's it. That's just how it started. And and I love it. And I still pinch myself every day that happened, because that led me to everything I get to do now. It led me to you guys.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I can't imagine not doing it.
It's like it's one of those things, like once you start and if you really enjoy it, it's hard to like just stop.
Yeah. It'd be like asking me to move away from here. I don't want to.
Yeah. I just hypothetically did that, so I apologize.
Yeah. I know, Jesse, you make me nervous thinking like that. No, I have thought of that though. I mean, because you always think like, oh, if you were to go anywhere else, where would you want to go? And it's just like, I know a lot of people that live here, not a lot of people, I feel like I'm really generalizing it, but I have seen a few people who live here move to Hawaii because it's like what we have here, but warm, because it is not warm here. It's like on a nice summer day, it's like 64, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, that would maybe be the only exceptional substitute for the Oregon coast. Maybe some tropical fruit and fish.
Adam, that's 17 degrees Celsius for you, buddy.
Oh, yeah. You're a Canadian.
I saw you clicking away there. I knew that was what you were going to do.
I'm trying to learn to be a better companion in our wild food talks, because temperature inevitably comes up, and weather always. So I like, we did this last episode. I had to look up the Celsius. I just feel like it's a good thing, because I've got friends that live abroad as well, and you know, they operate on Celsius, and I'm always like, you know, they're like, it's 4 degrees Celsius outside. And I'm like, that sounds really cold. And they're like, actually, you know, it's like, I have a light sweater on. I'm like, okay.
64 degrees Celsius also sounds terrible. So.
Yeah.
Like the sun.
No, that's awesome. No, I'm digging it. I liked Oregon when I was out there. I liked it a lot. I wish I could have spent more time, like, just exploring. I mean, we did. We were in the mountains with a purpose, but I always like to just go places and just, like, dig in and see, like, what is there and what to do. And I think, like, with the crabbing and the clamming and the shellfish and the seafood and the foraging and the mushrooms and all that stuff, which we're going to dive into here in just a minute, but that interests me so, so much.
Did you get a bear while you were here?
I did not, but I helped my friend get a bear, and I almost died packing it out. But yeah, it was quite the adventure. This is back, 2 years ago now. We were out there.
Not that long ago.
No, not super long ago.
Never been. I'd like to go myself. I'm super jealous seeing all the stuff you're pulling out of the water there. I'm just drooling over it every time, so I'd love to come out and
yeah, you guys should make a trip out here. We'll go foraging together.
Yeah,
fishing or clamping or whatever.
All of it. Let's do it all.
Let's do all of
that's
it.
That's a great.
You can do most of it right in the same spot.
It's perfect. So. We don't have to walk far.
Boat Trader, America's largest boating marketplace, offering easy financing and over 100,000 boat listings to choose from. Sell, find, and finance new or used boats on America's largest boating marketplace. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started. Boat Trader is America's largest boating marketplace with over 100,000 boats to choose from. We offer simple, comprehensive solutions for those looking to sell, find, and finance new or used boats. Visit BoatTrader.com to get started.
So I guess what's the most common thing that people, if we're talking about like coastal foraging, so that could be like, I would say like, we'll go surf to tree line, if that's a good, surf to tree line. So what's a thing people forage for, gather in that sort of zone?
Okay, so surf wise, the Central Oregon Coast is the Dungeness crab capital of the world. Technically, it's Newport, which is the next town up. But yeah, the Dungeness crab capital of the world. So we're very big on Dungeness crab here. And there's a couple different ways, or a few different ways you get them. You know, the commercial guys get them out in the ocean. Like I said, we have a little boat. So we take our boat out into the bay with crab traps. But also while we're digging for clams, you can also dig for Dungeness crab. So you look for sort of like a frisbee saucer shape in the sand. And usually if you dig that up, it's a Dungeness crab.
Oh, cool.
So, and a lot of people don't know that. You can just rake for them while you're out there raking for those cockle clams.
So they just dig down in the sand.
Yeah, they just bury themselves in the sand there. Huh. So that's always really cool. It's fun to get some Dungeness and some cockles all at one time. And clams are huge here. So we, like I said, I live in Waldport. So we have the bay here, which is where you would dig for the clams. We primarily have cockle clams here. A little bit farther north, they have razors, which are fantastic. We actually just dug for razors this last week. Ooh. And we did a whole ocean to picnic. We dug for our razor clams, my husband, my three children, and myself. And we took them back to the hotel. And because we dug them a little bit north of here in Oregon and Seaside. And then we cooked them up into razor clam po' boy sandwiches.
What?
And then we took them to go as a beach picnic and ate them in the same spot that we dug them that morning. It was awesome.
Oh, that's super cool.
I know. It was such a cool experience. These kids, I tell you, this is like their normal life. They just think this is normal and everybody acts like this. But my husband, I tell him all the time, you don't know how lucky yeah. you are that this is your child.
I tell mine the same because they like same thing, like foraging, fishing, hunting. Like my son thinks it's a regular occurrence that every weekend we go fishing. Like
everybody yeah. does it, right? Yeah. Does he just love
he
it?
He does. He's just like constantly like, Dad, I want to go fishing. Dad, I want to go fishing. Where's my fishing hat? Where's my fishing pole? Like he just has to have it, which is awesome.
That is so cool. That's what we want for our kids, right? Yeah. And then let's see, from the ocean and the bay there, you know, we've got, like I said, the slaw berries, which are seasonal, mm-hmm. like most berries. And they are everywhere. So it doesn't matter if you're walking to the mailbox, to the ocean, they're literally everywhere. And then, blackberries are huge here. So we have a ton of blackberries. And then, of course, the woods. So we've got a bunch of mushrooms too.
Well, so I want to,
and like a million. Other
yeah, I want to stay on the sort of the coast for a little bit. So, is there a seasonality to like foraging kind of along the coast, or just foraging in general? I know you mentioned it earlier. Like, there's always kind of something. But like, what's the general things you might find in the seasons?
Yeah, so, you know, most everything is happening right now. So this part of the year, late spring, summer, early fall, you've got everything. You've got tides. So with the clams, you're really at the mercy of the tides. Mm-hmm. You need a negative tide out here, which is a tide anything less than zero. So you would need those to really get to the clams. And winter tides out here on the coast can be very high. And we also have king tides, which are even higher. So you really do need to wait for minus tides. And we do have some in the winter, but they're usually like in the middle of the night, which, to be honest with you, is actually really fun. You put your headlamp on, you take a lantern out there in the pitch black, and you rake for crab or dig for clams. That in itself is kind of an adventure. But yeah, this time of the year, you know, you've got your Dungeness crab, your clams. We also have a bunch of crawfish this time of the year because rivers are lower. So this would be crawfish season as well. And we're, you know, like 5 minutes from that. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, crab season starts usually in like December, but those are the ocean guys. It's best crabbing here in the late fall, but you can usually get them anytime throughout the year. Oh. And there's no specific season. It's okay. Not like it closes.
That was my next here. Question. Is there like, and what type, so is it just Dungeness or are there other types of crabs as well that you would catch?
It's mainly just Dungeness. There's some invasive species like green crab. So if you do catch those, you have to keep them. They won't let you throw them back. Yeah, it's primarily just Dungeness.
How big are those coming in at usually?
What was that?
How big are they coming in when you find them?
You know, I think they have to be, I think the legal limit, don't quote me on this because I've got a crab gauge that I usually use, but I think it's like 5 3/4 inches is legal size. Maybe you can look that up while we're talking. I don't want to tell anybody the wrong size, but you know, at any local store here, you can buy a crab gauge, which you would just measure your crab with that. But I do think inches wise, that's the legal size.
Oh yeah, no, you nailed it. 5 3/4 inches, and then harvested commercially only when they reach a size of 6 1/4. So that's the carapace width. So that would be the width side to side, right?
side to side. Exactly. Yeah. So they're typically about that size out in the ocean. Like you mentioned, that they're a little bit bigger out there. Usually when we pull pots out there in the ocean, when we're, you know, salmon fishing or halibut fishing, they're big. So compared to bay crab, they're quite a bit bigger.
Oh yeah. I see the gauge. Here's a picture with the gauge. So we have a similar, so in Florida, where I lived prior to here, we harvested lobster and stone crab are the big thing, and blue crab, but they have a gauge for the lobster. They have to be, you measure from in between their eyes to the back of the carapace.
I didn't know that.
And it has to be, I don't know the inches, I don't remember. I just used gauge, I want to say, I think they just changed it, but it was somewhere around 3. I don't know. Yeah, so they had to be bigger than a certain amount. And then the stone crab claws had to be a certain distance or certain length as well.
Okay, and so those stone crab, so I've never been to Florida, but those are the ones you just break off, right? And then you throw the crab back and you keep their claws?
So you can take both off. I believe you can take both off. I only ever took one off because I feel like it's a little weird to leave it completely defenseless, so... but yeah, they grow back every year. So
that is wild.
And they're
talk about wild
eating. And they're tasty too. And in Florida there's a ton of other like unregulated crab species that you can harvest that taste equally delicious. That, you know, as long as you're like you're not harvest them by like the buttloads, you find them like one or two while out spearfishing, like spider crabs and things like that, and like perfectly edible.
I would love to try that. I've only had blue crab and Dungeness crab, and then of course those green crab that we pull up occasionally. I don't know, but I want to try all the crabs.
So good. I've never green crabs. I'm guessing they're green.
They are green, but when you cook them, they turn red.
Yep, that's fair.
So,
European green crabs.
Yes, ah. And they taste like crab. They're fine. That's fair. They're not worth the effort, really. I mean, they're so tiny. Their little legs are like tiny little legs.
Oh, yeah, they do look a little bitty.
But they're good.
Yeah.
Sounds like it could be good for crab stock.
Ooh.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that would be a great idea. Look at you with all these great ideas.
Any like plant life that you're foraging along the coast?
So I am not an expert forager. I mean, I really just started once we moved down here. So, I sort of just stick with the things that I know for sure that are not going to kill me. Right. So, which is smart. Like if I'm going to get advice to anybody out there where to start with foraging, just start with the things you know are not going to kill you, and then maybe move on from there. Actually, didn't take my own advice one time. We have a ton of skunk cabbage out here, and they're these massive. Do you guys have those there? Adam, you're shaking your head.
Some form of it, yeah.
Yeah, and so they're these huge, massive leaves, and someone told me that you could eat them, and I didn't do any research. I just took his word for it. So I harvested some skunk cabbage leaves, which smell awful. They smell like skunk. So that should be an indication right there that you should not eat them. But I cooked them up and with some bacon, because that's what you do with leaves sometimes that you don't know what to do with sauté, with some bacon and some onions. And actually, they were delicious. They tasted like a sweet spinach. But like two bites in, I realized that I had done something not smart at all by not doing any research. And my esophagus, all the way down to my stomach, was burning so bad. So then I researched it, and they are toxic. So, so don't eat skunk cabbage. Do your research. But, you know, start with things that you know. Like, we've got a ton of dandelion greens out here. So I pick a lot of those. I love dandelion greens. I love dandelion flowers, roots, all that. I don't know. I guess... honestly, guys, that's probably about it. A friend of mine just harvested a bunch of cow parsnips, which I had never harvested before, but I tried them and they were delicious. So I'm excited to get some of those now that I know that you can eat those. But since I don't necessarily have like a degree in any of this or a background, sure, I just proceed with caution.
No, that's fair. I think that's like a very important piece of advice of like, don't eat things you're not comfortable with.
Yeah, some things are going to get you, so you have to be really careful.
I think the more you learn and the more you do, because you start off very slowly and you add maybe one or two a year tops.
Yeah.
It starts to grow exponentially. I think you work on your observation skills and you start to train your eye to pick out certain things, and the processing the knowledge you're learning online or from others becomes easier. And for myself anyways, I found where I started off really slow, every year now it's exponential. I'm adding like 10 or 20 new plants and mushrooms every year, where before I would never want to do more than one or two because that'd be a little too much. I think you just, the more you do it, the faster it will become eventually, which is a cool thing about foraging.
Yeah, and that sounds fair. That sounds very accurate as far as my timeline is concerned. Because when I first moved out here, it was like, well, you know, I'm just going to stick with only the things I know. And then, of course, there is so much, especially with mushrooms, mm-hmm, that you're like, gosh, I really need to, I know these because they're, you know, they're pretty obvious, but you really want to branch out because you see them. And so you want to know which ones you can and which ones you cannot harvest. And that goes for plants and all kinds of different wildlife.
I think with me, for like what gets me specifically like mushrooms, is being like, where do I go? And like, you know, I live in Denver, kind of an urban area. So you have to find some places. And it's like, well, can I legally take them from here? Like, how much can I? Do I need a permit? Like, all these things. And it just turns into like this bigger thing of like, I'm like, I could do that or I could just go fishing. Like,
yeah. I mean, there are a lot of, I say strange laws. I'm sure they're there for a reason. I don't know. But like seaweed, for example, we have so much seaweed out here, right? Mm-hmm. We live at the beach. But there is a very short seaweed harvesting season. Mm. So it goes from like March to June and maybe May to June. I need to Google that. But like June 15th, we just reached the cutoff. And so if you harvest seaweed outside of that, you know, you could get in trouble. You get a fine. I did talk to a state police officer, a fishing game officer, and they actually didn't know about it. So you may or may not get a fine, but you might.
Yeah.
And so it is really important to be aware of the seasons. And here with seafood, there are a lot of marine reserves, so you can't take anything from a marine reserve, not even seaweed. So you have to be really aware of where you're at and what season you're in. And yeah, because there is a lot of legal limits to a lot of different things that you wouldn't think, like seaweed.
Which I think that's important when people are thinking about like starting foraging or getting into it, is like, know what you can and can't do, where you can and can't do it, and like when you can and can't do it.
Yeah. That's the tough part, because you don't want to discourage anyone. Like, this is too much. This is a lot of information. I don't know where to start. I don't know where to go. I don't want to get in trouble.
I'd say one point of advice for people who are hunting, who want to forage, is that hunters often get permission to hunt on farm properties. And farm properties are wonderful places to forage. Number one, because there's most of what you want to forage happens to grow in fringe areas or disturbed soil. So there's both of those in abundance on farms. And also a lot of farmland has a lot of history behind us. There was old farmhouses, old blocks of different fields. So you end up getting these really old plants that have become feral that grow kind of on the borderlines of the farm. So you're likely to run into like a lot of wild asparagus or old wild onions or different things like that. So if you're getting permissions to go onto farms to hunt, you might as well ask if they mind if you forage while you're there too, and most of them wouldn't care at all. So that's a great
place. That's awesome advice. I've never thought about that, because you can get like varmint tags out here for, you know, elk or deer that wander onto farmland. Of course, with permission with the farm owner. But I've never thought about foraging on farms. Mm-hmm.
One thing you just got to be careful is if they spray their crops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe looking at it a bit, but deeper in the woods, it's probably not too much of a problem. So
I think too, like here in Colorado, one of the places it's very common to find wild asparagus is along fence lines. Ooh. So like,
yeah.
You, a lot of people, some people will just drive up and down the dirt roads and in the rural parts and look for asparagus during the season.
Yeah, same here. Asparagus awesome. And wild berries and wild grapes and grape leaves, a lot of different things just growing all on the side of the road and fence lines and everything.
I do want to talk about two of your recipes that you have up on the Harvest of Nature website. One is the beer battered fried mussels with garlic aioli. So I have it handy here.
That's a good one.
But
if I don't say so,
like this one is delicious. No, it looks great.
And this sounds is great. A hit. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had like fried mussels though, like beer battered or any sorts. I don't think.
Yeah, it's a bit of an unconventional way to eat mussels, for sure. But when you eat mussels all the time, and especially as like a food writer here on the coast, sometimes I have to get a little bit more creative than I would otherwise. This is like I've done mussels in wine. Mm. I've done mussels in beer. I've done mussels in butter. It's like, well, now we're going to fry.
Sure.
So, yeah, and it turns out they're really, really good fried. I mean, most things are good fried, though, so I can't take all the credit for that. But, yeah, those crispy, so crispy on the outside, and the mussels are just creamy and tender on the inside, and then dipped in that garlic aioli. I loved those things. We have some minus tide starting in 2 days. I think I'm going to go get some so I can make those again. Those are so good.
Where do you find mussels at?
So, mussels grow on rocks. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, this whole stretch of the Central Oregon coast from 1 mile to the next, the beaches are completely different. Like my beach right here across the street from my house is a beautiful sandy beach. And just like a couple miles up the road, it's these huge, massive ancient rock formations. And that is where I would find those mussels. And they grow right there with the gooseneck barnacles as well. Which are one of the world's most expensive food.
Perfect segue, because the next one, the next recipe I had was the small batch garlic beer broth for gooseneck barnacles.
How about that? I didn't even plan nice. That. That was just, yeah. Those two are very, very, very good. I'm a sucker for a beer broth, though. I love mussels and beer broth too, but those gooseneck barnacles are incredible. When I first moved here, I saw somebody post those online, and I was like, these are the weirdest things. What are those? And so he told me about them, and I went out and got some. And I mean, they're unbelievable. They're like a sweet, tender clam.
Mm-hmm.
They are, you know, oddly shaped. They are kind of worm-like, so maybe chop them down a little bit so they so don't do totally you, look like a worm. But
so I'm just looking at them here, the picture and the recipe, and so like I think of barnacles like we have more in like the southern part of the United States, which is very like in the shell,
like a rock
kinda. Yeah, very sharp and ouchy and will scrape your boat really bad. But these are sort of like, I can't tell sort of how the base is, but like protruding from, and then they have what would be like the top of the barnacle, like at the very end.
Yeah, so they're a gooseneck barnacle. So they've got, I should pull it up like the anatomy of it, but the very end of it, sort of like the beak of it, is the filter part. So they open their beak and they have a whole bunch of filter feeders that pop out, and they, you know, get the plankton and stuff that are in the ocean. So that part you would discard because it's very sandy and not really edible. And it's the actual like stalk of the barnacle itself. That is the meat that you would eat.
Oh man. If you want to go down a rabbit hole, gooseneck barnacle anatomy, there is a lot of words for the parts of a gooseneck barnacle.
The more you know.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yep.
No, they're fascinating, though, because they look so strange. And especially if you can see them with their filter feeders pop out, they are absolutely alien-like. You would never in a million years think you could eat them. And they are one of the most expensive and prized seafood in the world, I think.
So if you could describe the flavor, what would you describe the flavor as?
Probably like a sweet clam. So they have like a clam texture, although more tender than a clam, because if clams are not done right, they can get a little tough. But yeah, so like a clam-ish texture, but sweet and briny. And I don't know. You're going to have to try them for yourself, because they're really unique. And I don't know. I mean, my daughter, she is 7 now, but, you know, she was, gosh, much, much littler when we first moved here. And they're one of her favorite foods. They've always been one of her favorite foods
that's
since we
awesome.
Moved here. So even kids love them.
No, that's a testament. That's good.
Yeah, exactly. And I am a mom, so I do want to disclose, you cook all the alcohol out of that beer before you serve it to children. Don't serve children beer ever.
That's very vague.
Yeah, no.
Early bedtime, kids. But
early, yeah. No, but yeah, because I do a lot with beer broth. I love cooking beer broth, but as a mom, I make sure that alcohol is definitely all cooked out.
100%. 100%. So,
if you aren't serving it to children, though, it could be a fun. An extra fun dish without cooking out all that alcohol.
What else was I going to say? So, no, that sounds great. The garlic beer broth. And it's like, it looks, all your recipes look really great. I love that. And they also sound really great.
Thank you.
And I'm sure they taste amazing. Just looking at the ingredients list and the preparation method. So, it's really awesome. You're using Rogue Beer, which is like, that's local to up there, right?
Right here, right up the road. Yeah, exactly. Rogue Brewery is huge here. I mean, most people know it. I think all over the world, it's worldwide, but it is made right here.
So
I think I saw some in Croatia 2 weeks ago, to tell you the truth.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Because it is all over the world.
So I have what would be a tip if you had it for anybody, or not saying that you don't have it, but what would be a tip for someone who wants to get into crabbing or clamming or harvesting barnacles, barnacling, I guess.
Yeah,
barnacling.
We make that up. I like that, though. Yeah. Like snorkeling, but it's barnacling. You know, I think just asking around. So, like, for example, when we were up in Seaside a few days back harvesting razor clams, we were in a spot we had never, never clammed for razors before. But we saw people out there doing it. So we knew they were there, because these people certainly looked like they knew what they were doing. But so we asked them. And that goes for even when we're down along our bay. And we're clamming. People come up to us all the time, like, what are you doing? You know? And I think most of us who are foragers, we love to share our knowledge. So if someone asks me, whether it's online or in person, if you see me along the bay, I am more than happy to tell you anything you need to know on how to get started with what it is I'm doing. So, let's say you're listening to a podcast or, you know, following Harvesting Nature or any of our personal Instagrams, reach out to us, ask us questions. Cause I can't speak for you guys, but I would assume you're the same. Like, we're just happy to point people in the right direction. I know a lot of times people out here on the coast, they don't know how to get started, whether it's like clamming or crabbing. So I'll, point them to rental shops that rent the clam guns, clam rakes, crab pots, and those rental shops will, you know, hook them up with every single thing that they would need for their adventure. I don't know. I think we're just all willing to share our knowledge, because it's really important for me, at least, that people understand where real food comes from.
Sure. No, that's awesome. So is it like, a tourist thing for people to come visit and go clamming or crabbing while they're there?
Oh, heck yeah. You know, everyone wants seafood when they come to the beach, whether it's at the restaurant or doing it themselves. And there's so many places here that rent all the gear. All you do is show up and they'll give you everything you need. They even sell the licenses there in these shops. And they'll tell you exactly where to go too. So yeah, there's tons of places here up and down the whole entire Oregon coast.
Oh, that's awesome.
That offer. Yeah, it is. It's really cool.
What are you doing next week, Justin?
Right.
Yeah. Come to the beach, guys.
Yep.
I'll personally guide you where to go too.
We have to take you up on that. Well, so what is a good what's a good way for people to get in touch with you if they do have questions? You mentioned Instagram. Is that a good medium for people to reach out?
That's probably the best place to get hold of me, at The Kitchen Wild on Instagram. Yeah, I'm occasionally on Facebook, but you know, not much. So if you're trying to reach out to me for any reason, I'm really good at responding to messages on Instagram. And I'm happy to answer any of them. I get all kinds of different questions, whether it is mushroom foraging or fishing, seafood, anything like that. And I'm happy to help.
Sweet. Awesome. And yeah, I'll say that to you. Like, I'll echo what you said. Like, all of us are happy anytime. Somebody messaged me while we're on this this podcast, one of my friends from work a while back, and was like, hey, I got the question about rabbit. And so excited. I love them. I love answering questions. So people reach out. Usually you reach out Harvesting Nature, you reach out Adventures for Food or Intrepid Eater, like reach out to Katie. It doesn't matter. Like, I think we all are equally engaged and want to be. That's why we're doing this.
Exactly. That's why we're.
Yeah. And we love delicious food.
Yeah. That's why we're all doing
Well, I think, unfortunately, like, this time has gone by so quick. I just looked at the timer here and I was like, holy smokes, we've almost hit our like hour mark. So, thanks for coming on and thanks for chatting. But, really, so what we kind of do at the last few minutes of this is kind of do sort of around the room, any last minute thoughts, alibis, anything you want to leave the audience with or any questions you have for us, like, anything's fair game. So since you're the guest, I will turn it over to you for anything you have.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know how this works, and you're making me go first. No, I mean, for me, I just really think it's important that people know where their food comes from. So I think when we have a connection with our food, yeah, we have a connection with a lot of other things too. So if you don't know where to start, there's a lot of great books out there. People like us, you can reach out to us. And we're happy to answer your questions. Like you said, I feel like we wouldn't be doing what we do if we didn't want to share this information in the first place. So, yeah, reach out to us. And if I don't know the answer to a question, which I often don't, I can certainly help point you in the direction of someone who does.
Sweet. Adam, last thoughts, buddy?
I just want to thank Katie for coming on, and I think I'm going to be dreaming about barnacling tonight.
Mm-hmm. Barnacling, yes.
My new goal.
Barnacling. Thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah. And seriously, come visit.
Yeah. No, I think I see it in the future, for sure. Mm-hmm. It sounds exciting. I've always wanted to come up and do it. Like, I've been pretty fortunate to forage and fish and crab and clam and barnacle on many coasts, but not the Pacific Northwest. So I think it'd be great to come up and visit. But no, I think overall, like, thanks for coming on, Katie. I really appreciate it. It was good to have this conversation. It's been a topic that's been on my mind for a while, and I think you're like the absolute perfect person to have the chat with. And you know, thanks for all the recipes and great things and inspiration that you're putting out there. And I hope that everyone enjoyed the show today. And as I mentioned earlier, I'll include all these links to the recipes, to all of the things we talked about that do have links in the show notes. So check those out. And then make sure you head on to social media and make sure you give us all a follow if you're not. You're missing out on some great things if you're not. And then whatever podcast platform you're listening to, please punch that 5-star button. Leave us a review. Tell us what we're doing wrong, or, you know, tell us what we're doing right. And thanks, everybody. Have a good night.